Edna Higgins clasped the cat to her head as she watched the racing green gypsy moth glide gradually back to the mascot aerodrome. She waved more out of exhilaration than any expectation that her salute would be seen. Beside her, Milton Isaacs attempted to push a particularly ugly greyhound back into the yellow Mercedes. The misshapen dog resisted, straining against the lead in its desperation to chase the biplane. The poet dragged the greyhound back, cursing as his immaculate cravat was pushed awry in the battle. The Rule Britannia touched gently down onto the tarmac and taxied to a stop. Charles Kingsford Smith climbed out of the passenger seat, pausing to speak at length and, by his posture, quite stridently to the pilot before he jumped down from the fuselage. A girl in overalls emerged from the hangar. "He banked too hard on the turn," she said, grimacing. "Smithy's letting him have it."
"Really?"
Clyde Watson-Jones folded his brawny arms, his weathered face creased into skeptical lines. "You could tell that from here?"
"Of course," she replied.
Loyal Clyde rolled his eyes, some pilot's daughter, no doubt, convinced she knew everything about flying. As far as he could tell, the flight had been perfect. The gypsy moth soaring into the sky, executing several aerobatic maneuvers, and then returning to the ground in a series of precisely angled glides and turns. Clyde had been impressed, though not surprised. Roland Sinclair pulled himself out of the cockpit, patting the Rule Britannia's fuselage affectionately before he strode over to greet his friends. The ecstatic greyhound broke away from Milton, hurling itself at its master, who reeled backwards under the impact. "Lennon, settle down, mate," Roland said uselessly as the dog writhed with momentum created by the movement of its overlong tail and tried to pull the leather gloves from his hands. He laughed, giving in and allowing himself to be mauled with robust affection. Eventually, Lennon calmed down and, having claimed a glove, retreated to the car to chew it in peace. Roland removed his aviator cap and goggles. He was boyishly elated. Milton clapped him enthusiastically on the back. "Well, that was a fine thing to see, Raleigh." Edna embraced him. "I was completely terrified you were going to fall out of the plane when it turned upside down."
"I banked a little hard on the turn," Roland admitted. "I wouldn't have tried the aerobatics if Smithy hadn't been on hand to tell me what to do." The girl smiled smugly.
Roland winced as he realized his mistake had not escaped Nancy Bird's sharp skyward eye. He introduced his fellow student of Kingsford Smith's flying school. "Miss Bird is a flying prodigy," he said. "She wouldn't have so royally cocked up the turn."
"I've had an extra month's lessons," Nancy conceded graciously.
"You're a pilot?" Clyde looked the diminutive young woman up and down. She was barely 5 feet tall and wore her hair in braids. "How old are you?"
"Clyde, you don't ask that of a lady." Edna was indignant.
"I'm 18, Nancy replied, raising her chin defiantly. Roland smiled. "It's embarrassing, shown up by a child."
"I am not a child,"
he laughed, and then so did she. Roland had taken an immediate liking to Nancy Bird. The girl was aptly named, giddy for the clouds with what seemed a natural affinity for flying machines. She'd made clear from the start that she intended to obtain her commercial flying license. If Roland had not been a Sinclair, perhaps he might have sought his fortune in aviation. But, as it was, his fortune had been amply made by his Grazier forebears. And as much as flight stirred his blood, it did not run in his veins and divine his view of the way that paint and canvas did. Even 1,500 feet in the air, he'd found himself composing a portrait of Kingsford Smith against an inverted horizon. He'd landed exhilarated, yet already he longed to take out the sketchbook he carried in his breast pocket and somehow capture the love of speed and freedom revealed in the lines of the airman's craggy face. So opens A Murder Unmentioned, a Roland Sinclair mystery by Sulari Gentle. You see, it's holiday time in the Australian outback, circa 1933, and Sydney's well-to-do families are taking to the air, as if a depression is a hole in the ground, something to be avoided upon a plane landing, not the state of the world economy in that year. A poet and his friend's rescue greyhound, a sculptress and a pilot, a young scion of a rich family who fancies himself a painter by vocation and who dabbles not only in flight but in socialism and has more than a few communist friends. Set the stage of our opening. Death, mayhem, and disaster are far from the scene
as we join our merry party on their outing at the rural aerodrome as these friends gather to watch their friend Raleigh Sinclair pilot his gypsy moth plane overhead. Well, as the story unfolds, we learn that the young, privileged aviator who graces the opening pages of our story is not a fellow for whom the silver spoon brought unmitigated joy. Instead, the son of a rich Aussie landowner has had a tragic personal past. We travel back in time about 12 years and find then-teenaged Raleigh engaging in what most of us would say were typical boyish episodes. But in his household, those teenage pranks brought down on Raleigh the wrath of his father, delivered through increasingly intense physical punishment. Punishment that his father encouraged his amoral groundskeeper to administer with force and enthusiasm when the father could no longer deliver the gusto he desired. So hurtful was the corporal punishment that as a 20-something, the adult Raleigh still stings mentally and physically from the pain of his father's wrath. Soon after a particularly harsh beating, late in the night, a gunshot rings out in the Sinclair family manor house. And young Raleigh and his older brother, just returned from World War I, discover that their potter has been killed. The story was that a burglar had fired the fatal shot, but as the opening lines of our story infer, if it was a burglar, then the rich old man seemed not a whit afraid of the intruder. Indeed, the very opening to today's novel reads like this. If Henry Sinclair had been a different man, he might have taken a step back. He might have quailed a little as the gun was cocked, or at least proceeded with some small respect for the weapon. But he was the man he was. And instead, Henry laughed, a mirthless blast of scorn, his eyes narrowing with cold, cruel fury. By gee, I'll make you regret. The shot was unexpected. Death took Henry by surprise, and so quickly that he had no time to wonder at a murderer's defiance. And so, returning to the present days of that summer of 1933, when the Aussie police discover the long-lost gun that killed Raleigh's father when Raleigh was but 15 years old, the police's interest in the now 13-year-old murder is reignited, and Raleigh, who in the eyes of the police had good reason to murder his dear old dad on that night when his dad had watched his youngest son beaten to near unconsciousness, Raleigh comes under the police's intense scrutiny. The onion is peeled as Raleigh remembers snatches of that evening, talking with his older brother. His older brother assures his younger brother that he will handle any police inquiry into their father's murder more than a decade before, but those conversations only heighten the reader's and the police's suspicions that the murderer of the elder Sinclair ought to no longer go unmentioned. As our story gains steam, Raleigh finds himself the hero of a daring rescue of his nephews when the family manor house is engulfed in flames one evening, a hero status that naturally raises Raleigh's visibility in his home community, as well as raising yet more suspicions among the police, suspicions disdained and swatted away by Raleigh's visiting communist friends, and even Raleigh's elder brother, whose sons he had just rescued, has a newfound respect for his younger brother. A bit of backstory here, the two brothers are convinced they are covering for each other's guilt, until Raleigh's would-be girlfriend breaks through the love-infused bravado of the two brothers, and they discover that no, neither of them killed their despised father. And so, as they are men of means and talent, they launch themselves into do-or-die efforts to find the real killer, while the police, stuck as they are in their certain belief that Raleigh was the murderer, continue to pursue their phantom of false certainty. Indeed, Murder Unmentioned is a novel populated by intelligent and rich enough characters who can pursue the real evildoers and exonerate the presumably guilty innocents. Murder Unmentioned is set, as I noted, in upper-class interwar Australian society. That's a mouthful. And that setting alone makes today's mystery kind of a historical thriller and unique from other Victorian Edwardian 1920s, 1930s novels that America
indeed the world, seem to be in love with. This is a setting, 1930s Australia, we rarely see, much less imagine, and it's a refreshing and, yes, interesting change. After all, it's difficult not to be charmed by a world where flying one's own plane is still a marvel to friends, to family, to neighbors, when to be a communist was a sign of disdain among the rich and powerful of society, but a mark of modernity for the up-and-coming and for the many working-class laborers and their families of your town. And as all of this is set during the Christmas holiday season, which in Australia, remember, means the hottest part of the year, and in the rural outback, we're far enough away from the urban centers of Sydney and Melbourne to offer our story a good amount of cozy, small-town atmosphere infused with big-city characters. Finally, Murder Unmentioned is the sixth of a series featuring artist, pilot, part-time sleuth Raleigh Sinclair and his Sydney socialist friends. So, if you like this novel, there are plenty more to delight your reading hours. And hey, how can you not be intrigued when a lead character has named his rescue greyhound Lennon, or Len for short? Quite a read. I want to finish with a brief moment, kind of midway through the novel, where Raleigh, who, remember, is being accused of killing his father, is talking over the situation with his friends. One night, Milton got up and checked that there was no one listening outside the door to the anteroom before he spoke. Raleigh, you know that we're with you, no matter what you did. You do know that. Clyde turned on the poet. Bloody hell, Milt. What do you mean by that? We need to know the truth if we're going to sort this out. Are you out of your tiny drunken mind? If I'd been in Raleigh's place, Milton said, without taking his eyes off Roland, I might have shot him. Well, Raleigh's not you. Roland watched them argue. His face was unreadable, almost distracted. It was Edna who intervened. Stop, she said. The word was softly uttered, yet somehow it had the force of a slap. Both Clyde and Milton fell silent. We're not here to make things more difficult, she took Roland's hand in hers. We're worried about you, Raleigh. Roland squeezed her hand as he met the poet's eye. I didn't shoot him, Milt. Lord knows I thought about it. During all those beatings, I killed him over and over again in my mind, but someone else actually did it first. Milton slapped him warningly on the back. Good. We don't have to smuggle you out of the country to avoid the gallows, then. We've only been back a few months. Roland laughed. If it came to that, Milton probably would know someone who could oblige. My brother's handling it. He's called in an army of lawyers. There's more silk on his payroll than there is in all of China. It'll blow over. Milton glanced at Clyde. There's really only one way to make sure you don't go down for your father's murder, mate, and that's to find out who really did shoot him. I didn't kill my father. The police will work that out eventually. As for who really did it, Roland said, his bearing hardened, I'm inclined to wish him the best of British. A murder unmentioned. And yet, through the course of the novel, we not only learn more about Raleigh Sinclair and his friends, but we learn who killed that abusive father. It's quite a novel by Sulari Gentle, and it's available at all of our fine libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.